The Babylon Project podcast was our last best hope for reruns. It failed. But in the year of the Shadow War, it became something greater. Our last best hope for fandom. The year is 2017. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
This is Maggie Egan, your ISN news anchor, and you're listening to the Babylon Project podcast. Thanks for listening.
Hello there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to another episode of the Babylon Project podcast. This is Raul Wybera, and as always, I am joined by Jim Arrowood and JP Harvey. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Yo.
Doing great.
Let's go.
Yo. Yo, yo.
Yo, yo.
One of my favorite characters on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh.
But we're not talking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We're talking about Babylon 5, but...
Stop stealing my line.
I didn't. I didn't say anything about podcasts.
Oh, okay.
I just said what we were talking about.
Oh, I see.
What are we talking about tonight?
Well, we are talking about the episode Gray 17 is Missing, the 19th episode of Season 3.
Aha! You know, this is one of my favorite and one of my least favorite episodes at the same time.
Oh, there's some really interesting stuff. Now, I'll qualify that by saying that when my college professor that gave me private lessons had something to say that was not positive, he always prefaced it by saying, that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Well. Let's not waste time and get started with the summary then, I guess, Jim.
All right. Very well.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
A maintenance worker goes missing in the gray sector. When Garibaldi goes to investigate, he discovers that something is not right. He finds that another deck has been disguised to look like 17. He stops the lift tube between decks and finds that the real Deck 17 has been taken over by a group of lurkers that believe, as the Minbari do, that the universe is actually conscious and that humans really have no way to understand this concept. The lurkers believe that they can achieve understanding and perfection when they are killed by a creature called a Zark that stalks Gray 17. Garibaldi realizes that the Zark is what killed the worker, and he uses a steam pipe and some bullets from a revolver he was cleaning earlier on. Since Sinclair has become Valen and has moved into an earlier part of the timeline, Delenn is chosen to become a Ranger 1 to take his place. While reluctant to do so, she finally agrees. Delenn is to be confirmed on Babylon 5. Narun approaches her and tells her that she is amassing too much power and that there are some who worry that she will take over Minbar herself. He further warns her that if she assumes the role of Ranger 1, he will kill her. Delenn tells Lanier what has happened and makes him promise not to tell Sheridan, so instead, Lanier tells Marcus. Marcus immediately confronts Narun and declares a fight to the death. Although they are well matched, Narun gets the upper hand, and just as he is about to dispatch Marcus, he realizes that Marcus and the other Rangers are willing to die for Delenn, but they would not be willing to do so for him. He spares Marcus's life and agrees to Delenn's new title. Sheridan is recruiting telepaths for the war against the Shadows, but is having a hard time finding enough. Remembering that Franklin was involved with the Underground Railroad for rogue telepaths, Sheridan sends Ivanova to find Franklin and learn whatever she can. She finds Franklin in a seedy dive, suffering from stim withdrawal, and convinces him to give over his files on the telepaths, but only after she promises that no one else will come looking for him. Well, there it is.
That was interesting.
Yeah, you know, the summary came out way better on the first part about the about Garibaldi's line mm-hmm. than it showed on TV. I guarantee you that.
Well, you know, one of Joe Straczynski's comments was about that thread was some things look better on paper than they do on screen. To paraphrase it, at least.
Character files opened.
Tell me, sir. Who do we have guest starring on this show tonight?
Okay, we have the ever-popular Robert Englund.
As?
Jeremiah.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog, was a good friend of mine.
You know, Troy is going to kill you. And I may help.
That was awesome.
Okay.
I've been waiting to do that for 20 something years.
Oh, I'll bet you you've just been busting at the seams all week, haven't you?
No, actually, I just figured, wait. Repatch, switch it around. Here we go.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We have Robert Englund as Jeremiah. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He's best known as his role of Freddy Krueger in Nightmare mm-hmm. on Elm Street and its many incarnations. He was in V, The Final Battle, Knight Rider,
which is
the
totally
Batman.
I've got it. You've seen when he was in on V, right?
No, as a matter of fact, I don't recall.
It is so opposite of Freddy Krueger. It's utter innocent, almost childlike. Robert Englund.
It's been a long time since I watched. I have the series over here, but mm-hmm. It's been a long time since I've watched it. Let's see. The Batman, he was the Riddler on The Batman. And he was also on The Spectacular Spider-Man.
Okay.
Yep. Moving right along, Catherine Moffat as Supervisor. Her only appearance on Babylon 5, she was also in Knight Rider. She was in Star Trek Next Generation, The Game. Mm-hmm. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Necessary Evil. She was on a Fantastic Four television series and an Iron Man television series. She's got quite a geek resume.
Yeah. She's one of those, it's like, you know, you recognize her, but then you really kind of have to go to IMDb to figure out where. And it looks like she's kind of been retired since the end of the 90s.
Yeah, she hadn't done much.
At least not on television.
No. We have John Vickery as Neroon.
Yay.
This is his fourth of six appearances on Babylon 5, and we've talked about him before. Mm-hmm. And we also have Time Winters as Rothen. This is his last of two appearances on Babylon 5. We've talked about him before. And then, of course, I felt so bad for the guy getting pulled down through the deck. I thought we should include Tom Barry as the red shirt, I mean, maintenance worker.
Well, he is listed as featuring, so.
Yeah, and this is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He was also in Space Above and Beyond, as you know, is one of my favorite mm-hmm. series. And another one of my favorite TV series, Alien Nation, one of the TV movies. And so those are the folks that we have on the show this evening.
Okay. You know, and what is the difference between guest starring and featuring?
Beats the crap out of me, I mean, I have no clue. I'm just a jive sax player, okay?
He's on for a couple of seconds and gets swirled down a manhole.
Yeah, he gets munched.
Mm-hmm. But good guest cast. Naroon is always a favorite.
Yeah, love that guy's voice.
Yeah. I'm amazed that he was on as for as few of episodes as he was, because just the amount of impact that he carries, he really kind of moves and shakes the whole direction of the series whenever he is on.
I think you can attribute that to really good writing, making him very memorable.
Right.
I mean, there are a number of people on this show that are very memorable and surprisingly didn't have a whole lot of exposure on the show.
True. Very true. Yeah.
Initiating plot analysis.
Okay. Now this episode is going to hop and skip around a lot as well between the two main stories, and the good main story actually has a couple of side threads that we kind of skip around. We've got the main Delenn line, and then we've got Marcus going off on his own, as you described in the summary. But before that, any of that happens, we have Zach recruiting telepaths. Okay.
Yeah.
Who is that guy? It's nothing to the story, but the clip is such fantastic material. We've got to give the guy some credit and play it.
All right.
Name?
Harry Sanders.
And you're a telepath?
Sure. What's the job pay?
Well, it's not a job. It's more like an adventure. Chance to help fight the bad guys.
Good. Look, are we talking hourly or weekly salary? Because I got expenses to cover.
Well, one thing at a time. If you're a telepath, are you Psycor?
No, they missed me.
Psycor doesn't miss anybody.
Well, some things just fall through the cracks.
Psycor doesn't have any cracks.
I escaped, okay? Now where do I sign?
What am I thinking?
I don't work for free.
What am I thinking?
Right. Got it. And I think you're real cute, too. Look, I really need this job.
But you're not a telepath.
I can learn. I'm a quick study.
Out.
I'll be an intern. I work cheap.
Out.
Great. See? It's not what you can do. It's who you know. Typical.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the recruitment drive isn't having that much success.
Apparently not.
They cast a pretty wide net.
You know, this is the tease coming into the episode. So this is kind of giving you a hint of what you're in for.
Mm-hmm.
But Sheridan has a good idea. He wants to get hold of Franklin's Underground Railroad. Remember from back in the first couple seasons.
Yeah. Problem is Franklin is still out on walkabout.
Mm-hmm. He's down under or down below. You know, that's a thought. I wonder if down below gave the idea of down under for a walkabout.
I sure hope you don't have that song queued up, because I'm going to hurt you if you do.
Oh, gosh. No, you're safe for the moment.
Okay.
But God knows what Troy's going to slip in on us.
Hey, we shall see.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, from here, we cut to the guy you had to give credit for the dude in the manhole, our red shirt. Yep. You think?
Yeah, he's looking to repair stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know about you guys, but this scene was kind of intense to me anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this scene here actually kind of leads to the first big hole in the Gray 17 side of the plot.
Yeah, well, he fell through a big hole, so.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back on Minbar, We have Delenn looking through Sinclair's goods, and Rothin wants to make, well, not just Rothin, pretty much the main head council of the Rangers wants to make Delenn the new Ranger One, the new Intel Za.
I like how she was expecting to support him.
Yeah.
He's building up to it, and she's like, oh, really, anything you need, I'm happy to support you, and then he drops the bomb on her.
Yeah. She was a little surprised. And what do you want?
She is a logical choice.
True. But I have a feeling there's going to be some other people surprised as well. And you can bet there's at least someone who won't be happy about it.
Well, of course.
Hey, in that box that she was rifling through.
Yes.
Did you guys notice the thing, the trinket, a coin, whatever that was with a Grim Reaper on it?
No, that I did. I noted the Battle of the Line part.
Yeah, next time you look at it, and I don't know what it was. I was hoping you guys could tie that back to something that I had missed somehow earlier in the series. Right next to the featured trinket in that box, I think it was to the right of it, is something with a Grim Reaper on it.
Hmm.
And it distracted me. It's like, well, I want to know about that. What's that doing in there?
Would that maybe be his squadron insignia?
Could have been.
That would make sense. That would make a lot of sense.
Seems we don't really know in the end, but yeah, that makes sense. And we have at least one, well, we have one unit in the Air Force that the Grim Reaper is on their patch. So it wouldn't be surprising that he was in a unit that might have had that.
Okay.
Kind of cool, though, I guess. Mysterious that we don't really know what that was.
It almost makes me want to go back and look at some of the Season 1 apps and see if there was, you know, where he's in his flight suit in a Star Fury, and
yes,
see if there's anything like a squadron patch or something on him.
Right.
It would be interesting.
Okay.
So that might very well have been a unit patch.
Okay.
Or coin or metal or something. But yeah, someone won't be happy, you said, Raul. I think we'll find out who.
Oh, no doubt.
Uh-huh. Well, we skip over to the Garibaldi thread of this. This is a half of the episode is very heavy Garibaldi. And it turns out Mike has an old 20th century style Smith & Wesson.
Yep. And that just happens to be a Model 15 combat masterpiece, a standard issue weapon for police officers in years gone by.
Great gun, too. Surprisingly, they do still use traditional firearms on Earth.
Yeah, what did he say? Private security and target practice, right? Something like that.
Yeah, those are the two things.
I like Zach's response. A slug thrower, huh? it makes sense. Assuming from the looks of it, most of their modern armor seems to be some sort of ablative armor. A slug thrower might have a real use, too.
Yeah, who knows?
Yep.
But they sure don't want to use it on the station.
Punching
holes in the walls.
Yeah. Well, that's why they use the PPGs. They won't penetrate the hull. Yeah,
exactly.
Zach is investigating a string of missing workers around Gray 17.
And,
yep.
Well, Gray 17 is missing, so
nope.
It must have been,
so it must
Gray,
have been Gray 16.
16.
Yes, it was. Sorry.
Yeah.
And the first thing that really annoys the heck out of me, he pockets the bullets. Mike does.
Yeah. Well, it's probably because he didn't have a speed loader nearby.
Gun safety.
Well, he didn't pocket the gun.
No, he pocketed the bullets.
Yeah.
But Mike's going to follow up on that investigation.
Well, so, perhaps he's going to need those bullets later. We never know.
Oh, no. What was it? Chekhov's gun?
Yeah.
In this case, it's Chekhov's bullets.
Yeah. Well, he's going to check him off pretty soon anyway.
Moving on, Susan is tracking down Stephen, trying to get the information for the Underground Railroad, and he doesn't look good.
No.
Yeah, it looks like he has the flu, sitting there sweating.
Yeah. Stim withdrawal apparently is not fun.
He did a great job acting that out and selling it.
Yep. He agrees, as you mentioned in the summer, he agrees that he'll help her if they leave him alone. And we get more of the keep walking till you meet yourself meme. Yeah, I guess today that would count as a meme.
Yeah. He's going to, you know, they're going to grant him his wish and leave him alone.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to find out that that won't go well for him.
Right. And I like the code name for the Underground Railroad files. Harriet.
Nice historic reference.
Yeah, I was going to say, who else got that reference here?
Yeah.
Well, it could have only been two things, and that would be the best one. Mm-hmm. The other one, wasn't it a handful of episodes back when there was some comic reference to Ozzie and Harriet?
Oh, cool.
Do you remember that?
Okay.
Sheridan and Sinclair were talking, and he goes, yeah, we're like Ozzie and Harriet, or whatever.
Ethel and Lucy.
Is that what it was? Ethel and Lucy?
Ethel and Lucy.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why I had Ozzie and Harriet in my head.
Oh, gosh.
But yeah, that would have been a weird thing for Franklin to talk about. So,
yep.
Yeah. Cool reference to Harriet Tubman.
Back to Gray Sector. It's mostly industrial. We get some background on it. And is it 29 or is it 30 gray levels? That seems to be the question.
According to Mike, it's 30.
According to the supervisors, 29.
Uh-huh. But, you know...
And what was her explanation for that? Do you remember?
Enlighten.
They were trying to save money.
Enlighten us. Oh, yes.
So they, you know, they cut costs by just...
skipping a deck.
Not building the extra deck. So there's 29 and not 30.
So the question then becomes, then, the decks are vertically stacked from the center down rather than horizontally stacked along the circumference?
Yeah, see, now I was wondering the same thing.
Yeah, because that kind of gets confusing.
Yeah, it would maybe it'd be kind of nice to see a cutaway of where everything is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe somewhere on the internet there is. But did you notice that no matter what the camera angle was, the level 16 sign was visible? I mean, there had to be 10 level 16 signs pasted up on the walls.
I think they're trying to give a hint.
Yeah, I think they were trying to drive a point home, but they were using a sledgehammer.
Yeah, enjoy it because you're at the high point of that piece of episode. It's going to kind of go downhill from there.
Yep.
Well, DeLynn explains to Sheridan what's going on and what needs to be done. He actually likes the idea of her as Ranger One. Yeah. And kind of sounds like for a lot of the same reasons you do.
Well, yeah, it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, she's formerly of the Grey Council. She is a leader. She is... part Minbari, part human. We have human and Minbari as rangers. It just makes sense.
And she's been at the forefront of this shadow war all along. So, yeah, it's logical.
Yeah.
Except, is it me or does Narun seem a little less happy about it?
Well, you know, Sheridan says congratulations and walks away. And right after that, it's kind of a snide, backhanded Narun saying, congratulations, DeLynn. And he doesn't look happy.
No. He sounds like his toes are definitely being stepped on. Religious caste giving orders to the military. Yeah. And you know what, though? If you really want to be honest and you look at it just on its face value, his concerns are legitimate.
You know, I thought the same thing. His argument was logical, and it was valid.
Yeah, I mean, he had fair concerns. Though on the flip side, I will say that his threat is kind of ominous.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's not expressing himself about his concerns as much as it seems like he is expressing his wounded pride, or, you know, because, you know, he feels he should be Ranger One, or at least one of the warrior cast should be.
Right. Oh, definitely one of the warrior cast, but he's appealing to tradition for that.
Well, and this is the second wound, right? You know, he took, or the warrior cast took the first beat down at the Great Council.
Right.
When she challenged them about their inability or unwillingness to act. So, you know, her pride or whatever the deal was, he and his guys skulked off and brooded about it, and now suddenly there's this going on. And I don't know if he saw this as a chance to redeem himself and the cast, or if it was just, I kind of want to think he's the same guy he was before. It's really a selfish thing. It's not a service oriented thing. He's just had, this is another punch to the face for him.
Yeah.
So he'll say all the right things,
mm-hmm.
but then he says, then he drops the threat, which is, you know, is pretty inappropriate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I can't figure out is he just pops up out of the shadows. No one knows he's on the station. I mean, come on.
Hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, he didn't have a pocket full of diamonds, so.
That's a good thing.
Oh, but I mean, he should be, you know, it should be known that he's on the station. He's not mm-hmm. going to get off of a ship and onto the station without passing a security checkpoint.
Right.
And so I would call this somewhat of a plot hole.
Yeah, though we've already seen that you can bribe your way through just about anything.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. Unless, of course, the Minbari secretly have transporter technology.
Mm. Or he could have gone under different credentials, too.
In a windsword uniform?
Yeah.
when he came on board, he was wearing his gym clothes.
Right.
Or I mean, jeans or something.
Yeah, he was in the civvies.
That's like wearing a lit sign in a mariachi band. I mean, that outfit.
I suspect JMS just took the same liberty with this as he did with Morden coming on through one of those holes in security a couple episodes back.
Yeah. Well, he had that bag of diamonds that he was getting good reuse value for, at least.
Right.
In the meantime, we spend a fair amount of time staring at this, but let's just leave it at Micah's counting elevator stops. All right.
You know what? Pretty simple, pretty cool way to do quick mm-hmm. analysis on, you know, that was the thing that you put your palm to your head if you see it and weren't thinking about it and go,
yeah,
oh, you know, I seems somebody should have thought of that a long time ago, but it's just the kind of thing nobody ever thinks about.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That was neat.
Yeah. Now, Delenn briefs Lanier on Nerun. You know, we haven't seen Delenn much lately, have we?
No, he's been kind of quiet.
I like Lanier's comment. His suspicion that Nerun's intent as far as the threat, you had mentioned it sounded pretty ominous as well, pretty serious. Both of you have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Lanier's comment is that Nerun's going to go beyond harsh language.
Well, and that's his nature.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't expect any less.
Warrior cast, so do the math.
Any and all means necessary. That's probably not just writing a harsh note.
No.
You've made me angry.
Uh-huh. Well, today, now, just remember, though, today, He would holler that he's offended, and he would go find a safe place.
Oh, God. Trigger, do we have to start putting trigger warnings on this? Not going to happen.
Nope.
Warning, if you are not a rational human, this show may trigger you.
Yeah.
Anyway, it seems Mike's missing floor is Gray 17. Surprise!
Hey. Yep.
He found it.
He found it. Golly.
And it is a mess.
Yeah, a whole floor of junk. Question, didn't he know that the doors would close the moment he walked in?
I don't know. All that junk just kind of stunned him for a moment, and he forgot about the doors closing on him.
Okay.
He had paused the lift and manually
overrode the doors.
So I kind of got the impression that there it would sit as is until he went back in and reactivated the lift. But
that would have been too easy.
It's like the kids in the horror movie that are running into the dark house, which is absolutely not what any person would do.
Or the person running, picking the one abandoned floor in the hospital.
Yeah. Right.
Which I can tell you doesn't happen.
You know, Mike in a different context might have grabbed a piece of junk and just jammed it in the door to make sure it didn't close, but you know why he didn't do that, right? Script didn't say to do that.
Exactly.
Why is that person going behind the shed where the killer is? Script says so.
Okay. Well, in that case, then, will someone please explain to me the damn puppet?
Okay, I gave that some thought.
Oh, no.
All right, we have Robert Englund, a.k.a. Freddy Krueger, on the guest cast. Okay. And so we've got to have some kind of bizarre thing going on to raise the tension a little bit, keep the tension level up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at this and saying, what is that doing there?
Exactly.
We've got all this junk on that floor, on that deck, from one end of the deck to the other. It's all industrial-looking pieces and bits and parts. And then there's a puppet there?
Right.
I mean, what is that? So, I don't know. I think it was just an attempt to keep the level of tension high.
Or we can just use JP's answer.
It was in the script.
Okay. But that's no fun.
Now, what is fun is what happens next. As you said in the summary, Lanier visits Marcus instead of Sheridan.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to try to discuss that conversation. I engage in my share of philosophy and logic, and this one defies me, so let's just go ahead and play it.
Hello, Linnea.
Marcus. I've never seen your quarters before. Very restrained.
Well, it's the best Vannevar could find, given how tight we are for space. It's enough of my needs. Any more would be a distraction.
I'm trying to avoid breaking a promise by breaking a promise. I promised Delenn that I would not speak of this to the captain or let him know. She did not mention you by name, but that was implicit. If I tell the others in the chain of command, then Sheridan will find out and I will have broken the promise. But if I break my promise by telling you, since you are not in the chain of command, he may not find out about this and I will not have broken the promise.
I'm in awe, Linnea. The way you can take a straightforward, logical proposition and turn it inside out so that, in the end, it says what you want it to say instead of what it actually means. Did this come naturally, or did you attend some special martial arts class for the philosophically inclined?
Marcus, I think Delenn's life may be in jeopardy. One of our own, a former member of the Grey Council, has challenged her right to lead the Rangers. I think he may resort to violence to stop her.
Warrior cast.
Mm-hmm. So basically, he's setting up Marcus to stop Naroon.
Yep.
Marcus is expendable, right?
At this point, no.
Well, he does tell him to avoid a direct confrontation with Naroon.
Yeah.
Is that like, don't touch the park bench, it's got wet paint on it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, telling Marcus that, yeah, pretty much.
The designee to be Ranger One may get killed. Don't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and we know that any ranger is going to take offense to that and take it personally and make sure that it does not happen.
Right.
That's their job.
Obey the oath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I'm going to say, yeah, the oath right there, and any ranger, human or Minbari, is going to take that oath pretty darn seriously.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Lanier, too, you know, it's kind of funny, the old, so I'm going to break a promise by breaking a promise, tells Marcus about it. And, you know, maybe if somehow Dylan finds out about it, he can say, yeah, but, you know, I told him. Yeah, I told mm-hmm. him, but then I told him not to directly confront the problem.
Well,
you know, I just wonder if there was that kind of depth in the lines where you could watch almost like a kid, right? I'm going to construct this crazy story
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to give myself some outs that make sense to me. Of course, then the parent walks into the room and goes, really? but Marcus built this up in his head. And to his credit, this is a crisis for him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And, you know, also to his credit, he does honor Lanier's promise. He could have taken this to Susan or Sheridan and, you know,
right.
done it that way. But he honored the confidentiality and respected, you know, just Minbari's sense of honor.
Yeah, he's just going to intervene himself.
Mm-hmm.
And this wasn't, hey, listen, I got to tell you, I broke my diet. You know, Dylan, he's worried she's going to die.
Right.
And you can tell he's got a compulsion just like Marcus does. He has got to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so he does the only thing that he seems to have thought that he could do. As childish as it was my term, or as, using twisted logic as Marcus describes it, to make it say anything he wants.
Yep.
But he had to do something. And then, of course, Marcus has to do something as well.
Correct. But now our attention turns back to drugged Mike in the Church of Gloom. And can we not consider the hand?
Yeah, let's have this.
I think you've got the correct clip.
I don't suppose this is the best time to point out you're all under arrest.
Consider the hand. Veins, capillaries, muscles, cells, moons, stars, planets, galaxies, all trapped inside ephemeral, translucent flesh. The palm. We have lines. We have signs. We have shapes. Equations. All creation in a hangnail. My name is Jeremiah. Welcome to the end of the world.
Yeah, consider the hand.
Let's go back to the Three Dog Night.
Jeremiah makes me tired.
And yeah, he sure seems like he's been drinking his wine.
Yeah, so here we get all this build up to the bad guy, and what do we get? We get this. Consider mm-hmm. the hand.
Consider okay. the hand.
Oh
yeah.
My God!
I love Mike's line. He looks at him, kind of stunned and not sure if he's gonna get a beat down himself because there is a crowd.
Uh huh.
And then he makes the comment about, would this be a good time to tell you that you're all under arrest?
After yeah. that little sermon, I'd be looking for the beatdown.
Yeah.
That may be my favorite line or one of them in the whole episode. I thought that was great.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
No, this was so anticlimactic. And we haven't even reached bottom yet.
No, it continues. this thread, at least, is going to continue its downward spiral.
Mm.
But we get a we actually get a really sweet moment. We get a good snuggle moment here. The awe moment of the episode is Delenn telling Sheridan about her family life. So Delenn's mom is essentially a nun. Her dad died about 10 years ago. And how do I put it? She was definitely a daddy's girl. It seems the Minbari had the whole daddy's girl thing is just as real on Minbar as it is on Earth.
Yeah.
She is no shock to anybody. She is such a good actor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we are, and this is just a piece of background. We really don't get a whole lot more background on her.
No. There's the episode when we go back in history for her. But no, we don't really get a whole lot more.
No.
But, you know, one thing that makes it difference for me is that whole bit about you're too big to ride on my shoulders anymore. That hurt.
Oh yeah.
At least now it did when I did the rewatch back in the 90s when I first saw it. No, I didn't get it. But
oh yeah, you get a whole different perspective when you have children, don't you?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I think my son gets actually a little sad about it too sometimes. Well, he's only 14, but he's 5'10", 5'11", closing on 200 pounds of muscle here.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like I'm the only one left in the family that he can do a dive bomb plop on. You know, as huge as this kid is, and he looks like he could be 17 or 18, he's still only 14. So he's at that one moment he's, I'm an adult, don't tell me what to do stage. And then the next moment he's, mommy.
Hey, I got news for you, partner. They're all that way. They're all that way.
Yeah, trust you do junior me. High, don't you?
Uh-huh. Trust me.
Okay, so you know exactly what I'm talking about.
It is probably, it's got to be that 7th and 8th grade year.
Yep.
Has got to be the most horrible time of a kid's life because adults are telling them, why don't you grow up? So,
and then
they try to do grown up things. And then it's like, why are you in such a hurry to grow up?
Yeah. And or you can't do that. You're just a kid.
It really is. It's this area where you're caught in between.
Yep.
It's a very tough time of life, but at any rate, this is not the teaching middle school podcast.
I was going to give you your setup for that, for that line. I was going to point out, at least thank God Antonio doesn't watch Riverdale.
Yeah, no, this is not the Growing Pains podcast.
Yep. Although I wish it was off this next one because we're back to Jeremiah and his cult. Let's just say it seems that they're into recycling of a sort. And yeah. Apparently his little cult are pantheists, which, you know, basically that's the universe itself as deity.
Yeah.
Kind of in line with Minbari beliefs that they point that out, but.
Yeah. And his speech kind of sounded, somewhat, can I say Sagan-esque?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
You can, especially if you go back to the original Cosmos.
Yeah.
Anything to say more about that particular? I hate to say it, but it's kind of like, okay, we can go ahead and just, thank God, move on.
Let's do that.
They are getting ready for the ceremony. Someone correct me. Are we going to have bells? It seems like everything else in Minbari ceremonies have those little bell trolleys going ching, 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 ching.
Yeah. Minbari and Vulcans do that too.
Yeah, the Vulcans do that a lot too. You're right. Yeah. Marcus is taking, as predicted, Lanier's advice and promptly throwing it out the window. His idea of delaying Narune and avoiding a direct confrontation seems to be a death challenge.
Yeah.
Dinshar.
Yeah. Narune tells him, this does not concern you. Why are you getting involved? This doesn't concern you. And my question is, how doesn't it concern Marcus? He's a ranger, for crying out loud.
Well, bear in mind, Narune doesn't exactly have the highest opinion of humans to begin with. So does he really even consider him a ranger, at least at this point, or a real ranger?
Well, perhaps.
I like that Marcus doesn't need his approval or consent, though.
Yeah.
I am a ranger. You're a human, and I don't like you much. Okay, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I have a job to do.
And we
go, Marcus.
Yeah. Just as a quick aside, the ceremony goes on while all this is happening, and back to this. Let's just say Marcus is, on the one hand, he's pretty clear he's not going to win this one, but he is actually giving a decent accounting of himself.
Well, if you recall, they both mentioned who trained them in pike fighting. So
same teacher.
Yeah. And they're pretty evenly matched, really.
Yeah.
One guy seems a little more experienced.
I was going to say experience.
And it paid off.
Age and experience will overcome youth and ability.
Mm-hmm.
Though the flip side of it is, in a fight, it's easier to not lose than to win, if that makes any sense. That was one of the things we were taught.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a worst-case scenario, but if his goal, Marcus's goal, wasn't to win, Marcus's goal was to not lose.
Right, and, you know, Marcus really impresses Narune here.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't even necessarily with what he did, but more what he said after Marcus was down. Marcus was finished.
We're going to get to that one. We're going to get to that one in a moment.
Hey, by the way, at the ceremony.
Yes.
I don't think it has any real significance, but we get that one quick shot. You know, the ceremony's beginning, and then we go off to see Marcus not there. But did you notice who's pretty much at the front of the crowd?
Jakar?
Yes. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, it feeds the storyline that he is not the man, the being, the creature. You know, he's not the same guy that he was early on, and Delenn was one of the people who said that.
Contrast that with his response to the invitation to the rebirth ceremony.
Right.
So, yeah, we've definitely got a new Jakar here. Jeremiah is getting on my nerves. Mike pulled the old I'm sick trick. And, of course, Jeremiah goes right for it. And do we need to talk any more about this?
Nope. Not really.
Is there anyone here for whom Jeremiah is not getting on their nerves?
Yeah.
The silence is deafening.
Right. Yes. Cue the crickets.
Hey, when we get to the end of the episode, I actually have a theory for why all of this other stuff is in here.
Mm. Okay.
But I'm gonna wait till the end to
share.
You
get the last word.
I want to hear it for sure.
To get back to what you guys were talking about. And Narune honestly doesn't seem to want to kill Marcus at this point.
There would be no honor in it.
No.
From Narune's point of view, there would be no honor in that.
Yeah, and I think there actually might be some growing respect for the guy, too. Let's go ahead and play their conversation.
I've just broken two of your ribs. Sorry. Make that free. Why? Why all of this? Pride, duty. You've been trained well, but you must have known you couldn't win. So why do it?
for her. We live for the one. We die for the one. This is her. 17. In Phelan's name.
I'd almost say he's being more Minbari than Nerun at this point.
Nerun would agree with you.
Yeah.
See, these warrior cast guys seem to have a lot of hubris as part of their makeup.
Yeah.
And I guess that goes with the territory.
I don't know. Most of the military, my military friends, though, almost have a humility to them.
I'm not talking about professional military as we know this here, as we know it. Okay.
Right.
But these Minbari, they are warriors. They are, you know, and they take great pride in being able to do what they can do. And they brag about it, and they let everybody know about it, and they're like a bunch of Klingons.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Good point. Good so, point. I see what you're getting to.
What I mean by it goes with the territory within the context of the show.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
For the Minbari. Now, the people that are military, the humans that are military, They're just normal people. They're there to do a job. They wear a uniform. Mm-hmm. They have a job to do. They do their job. And while we have seen evidence of ego on a couple of occasions, it's rare.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense.
Okay.
There's elements of that in the military. I wouldn't call it hubris, but you know, when you, well, I'll use the Air Force as the example. You know, historically there was an entity in the World War II time frame, you know, beginning of the Air Force, end of the Army, Air Corps and Air Forces that were generally referred to as the Bomber Mafia.
Oh.
And if you weren't in the bomber force, if you weren't a bomb dropper, you were second class.
Hmm.
Now, no one really thought that, but there was an arrogance almost, an attitude among the bomber community that they would project, they would even say in the right circumstances, you know, this is what we do.
Mm.
We drop bombs. We will kill the enemy. And some would say, man, these guys are arrogant. Sure, full of themselves. In today's Air Force, it's more the fighter mafia, the fighter community.
The fighter jocks, okay. Yeah.
Right.
Right?
They got a lot of swagger. But
And people hear that stuff at times, they're like, oh, those guys, right? Oh my gosh, they're so full of themselves, and they, you know, everybody's a, you know, a flying god, and, well, but then you meet them in a different context, and like, kind of like you said, right? Oh, these are just professional guys and gals, they're just doing their job. Mm-hmm. But on some level, putting aside the exception to the rule, you do always have those people that stray into the unprofessional, but, you know, as well, using our country as the example, as Americans, isn't that the kind of guy or gal you want facing the enemy that's going to go out there and say, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm really good.
Yeah.
You're sure not going to win.
Especially if they have the talent to go with the mm-hmm. back up the words.
Yes. Right. A la Douglas MacArthur.
Yeah.
For example. Right. So, I, you know, some of that I see in this character, but some of it too, we talked about it already, really. I mean, this guy has gone from being, professionally insulted by what happened now twice,
mm-hmm.
To taking it personally. And that's the friction point. But
right.
If you took that away and you look at this guy, go, God, that guy is really full of himself. That warrior. I hope he is, really. I don't want him to go, man, I we're going to war. I hope we win. You know. No, I want you to go out there going, we're gonna win. We are going to win. And that's what I see.
Kind of goes back
too.
To the, what's the purpose of the military? Kill people and break things.
That's right. Right.
And that's not an original quote of mine, so I don't take any credit for that.
We told, you know, we told the cadets at the Air Force Academy, we're training you to be a manager of violence.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to spend people's lives. You're going to do all kinds of different things, but your job in the end is to win. That's the purpose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you want to breed that into them, but you get some guys like this guy who wants to stray across the line and becomes a problem to some extent. But Marcus, you know, back to this scene, this fighting scene, Marcus changed him a little bit, seemed to get to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the end, we're going to find out just how much.
Mm-hmm.
I hate doing this after this wonderful conversation. But we've got Mike on the way out with Jeremiah in tow. And isn't it interesting? Jeremiah, unlike Naroon, does not believe in violence. Just feeding people to things in rubber suits. I mean, Zargs. That's their concept of recycling.
Yeah.
Now, okay. Before we move on, the one thing, and I'll give you guys a chance to respond, you know, throw in any other comments, but just remember this one phrase, one of the most dangerous aliens in the whole sector. Okay?
Yeah.
That's
brought a
setup.
Zark on board? One of the most dangerous aliens in the whole sector.
Yeah.
By the way, how did that get through
the whole
security, right? What, you brought that on board? How do you not know? You didn't know that that was brought on board?
No, I'll tell you what. Security is slipping on the station big time.
Somebody better talk to the security chief.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
Oh, but he's busy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So our Zarg shows up in his rubber suit.
Not yet.
And
thank God.
Well, talking about rubber suits earlier, but I saw a little bit of a... I don't know if it was intended to be an homage or whatever to back to some old... Remember when Morden shows up and I said Twilight Zone?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this critter shows up and it was like, this looks like it's right out of an old movie.
Or Doctor Who.
Yeah, or Doctor Who.
Tom, yep. I mean, yeah. Let's get away. Let's get back to that in a moment here.
Mm-hmm.
Because Naroon interrupts the end of the ceremony. He throws Marcus at her feet, notes that there's blood between them now, mostly Marcus's. And that said, he does recognize her right to be in Tilzah.
Yep. He's still not happy about it.
No. I'm sorry. No, he did not throw Marcus at her. He threw Marcus's pike at her feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, bloody pike.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if it was his or Marcus's, but it was. He threw it on the ground and made it clear that that wasn't his blood.
Yeah, that it was not his blood. You're correct there. Well, our Zarg does look like a Tom Baker era Doctor Who alien. And it does.
It had to be campy like that on purpose. I don't know.
You know
why.
What? Read the Lurker's Guide and Straczynski's comments. I don't think that's the thing that he was not happy about with this thing. He was kind of apologetic about it.
So the doll was okay, but the rubber suited monster was.
And
the
rubber suited monster
not...
that runs away from a little bit of steam.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that most dangerous alien in the whole sector.
Yeah.
It made him hurt.
Yeah. Hot steam at 4 feet, 5 feet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It triggered him. Poor monster.
Poor
steam
monster.
Steam melts snowflakes.
Had to go find a safe place.
God.
Sorry, did I say that?
That's okay. I think we were both, Jim and I were both thinking it, so.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, it was the Pike, like I said. I got that because Lanier rushes off and he finds Marcus, who is definitely looking in bad shape. Though I guess it's worth noting that he was still alive.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any doubt that that was a choice that Neroon made.
Well, Lanier seemed to think that he was possibly dead. You know, the first thing he does is check his pulse. So it wasn't, he's knocked out. The assumption was, he's probably dead. Checks his pulse. Yeah. It looked like that's what he was doing. And then, in relief, scoops him up, which I thought was pretty cool, too, that he's just going to pick this man up and walk away.
Yeah. And, you know, knowing who he fought, Marcus being dead probably wouldn't have been a surprise.
I think that was probably even more of an expectation. Okay. And this, I guess, is going to be the last of it. But let us make this
clear. And it could
clear.
Be the worst of it.
Yeah. it finally gets as bad as it can get. Steam does not fire bullets.
No. No.
It is the impact on the primer that fires the bullet.
Yeah, the bullets that Mike had were center fire, 38 special rounds.
Center fire, 38 special, and you know, even if the bullet did somehow magically discharge, I don't even know if it would have had enough momentum to clear that tube. There's with the amount of space around it,
right.
I mean, I don't think folks appreciate how tight the bullet fits in the actual barrel. Not the receiver part, but the actual... one of my all-time favorite television shows did the same thing. It was an episode of Fringe in, I think, the fourth season. It's like, no, don't have Olivia do something that stupid. Anyway. Yeah. But a few rounds of 38 special kills the most dangerous creature in the sector.
I don't even know how many times that thing fired off, but Mike's aim is a lot like a stormtrooper's. I mean, he was hitting all around. And the creature died anyway.
Hey, it's good enough for the FBI. Old FBI. Nothing more to say.
Yeah. Yep.
Because we're done with that.
Thank God.
Piece of the story.
Yeah.
On to the more interesting material. Shall we say Delenn is less than happy with Marcus and Lanier?
Yeah, they messed around. They did stuff that they weren't supposed to do.
Mama's mad.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Neroon arrives. They're a little put out by that as well. He makes it clear that if he had wanted Marcus dead, he would be dead as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to have some words alone with Marcus. And this is just an amazing monologue. Straczynski's got this thing about writing these dense monologues. And it takes a special actor to really deliver them. And this is one of those. Now, this is a longer segment, I think you've got, Jim. So we're still going to make our way through it.
Okay.
Did you come to finish what you started?
If I had wished him dead, he would be dead.
Then why did you stop short?
That is between the two of us. I would speak to him alone, one warrior to another. Then I will go.
He will not hear you.
Then I will speak briefly. Densha, you said, to the death. And death there was. The death was mine. To see a human invoke the name of Valen. To be willing to die for one of my kind when I was intent upon killing one of my own. The rightness of my cause disappeared. Strange that a human in his last moment should be more of a Minbari than I. Perhaps it is true what Delenn said, that we are not of the same blood, that we are of the same heart.
The next time, you want a revelation, could you possibly find a way that isn't quite so uncomfortable?
Captain, you wouldn't believe the day I've had.
The day you've had? We had an assault on Marcus. Someone got into the Ranger ceremony, could have killed Delenn. And where were you?
Okay. Well, first, there was this missing maintenance man. Well, he wasn't missing. He was killed by a Zarg. But I'm getting ahead of myself. That was after I found out that the entire 17th floor of Gray Sector had completely disappeared. Well, not disappeared exactly. This weird cult had taken over the place, see? And there was a dummy that shot Tranks out of its eyes. It was very strange. But it was all supposed to be perfect. That was the thing about it. And there wasn't a way out. But there was. Except it was spiritual. And you had to die a perfect death. That's where the Zarg came in. And either it was going to kill me or I was going to kill it. And am I going too fast for you?
It sounds better on paper.
Well, we could have skipped all that other stuff and just had Mike's description, and it would have just
the episode summary
been just as good. Yep. Isn't it interesting for someone? It takes Naroon to finally bring us someone who truly understands Marcus.
That scene, you know, with Delenn and Marcus and Lanier and Naroon, that best scene in the episode. The, you know, that was the story.
Yeah, it was. It was. And that whole bit was between Marcus and Naroon.
Right.
I mean, Delenn are outside not hearing what's going on, looking at when Naroon starts laughing, looking at him like, what is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure the thought going through her mind, at least, was, what'd he do, just come here to mock him?
Right. Mm-hmm. Is he in there laughing at him?
Yeah.
And he was, but not in a bad way.
No.
Yeah.
One warrior to another. Mm-hmm.
Great words, right? That was the beginning of knowing something had really changed in him. He'll talk to him one warrior to another.
Yeah.
Did you catch two... Naroon's view of Delenn appears to have changed. And not just he'll accept that she has the right to be Ranger One. What did you catch what he said about her to Marcus?
Hmm.
One of my kind. Yeah. Wasn't the criticism before that she was Minbari human?
She's no longer one of
right.
When she went into that chrysalis, she was no longer one of
And
his kind.
He seemed to take that as an offense to as a Minbari that she had changed. And here we come back full circle where he compliments Marcus for being so willing to do what he did for one of his kind.
Mm-hmm.
All that's neat.
Well, you know, we've mentioned Jakar's evolution. We've talked about Londo and his changes and so forth and so on. In just a few episodes into the fourth season, we're going to see a huge change in Naroon's attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So he is kind of evolving. So we need to remember this, that he's changing as time is going on.
His arc is just brilliant and it's powerful, and it's great to watch.
Yep, and there's only two more episodes with him.
Yeah, they do a lot in a short time with that character.
And yeah, they do.
It seems like he's a presence that's constantly there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when you think of things going on in Mimbari and things, you know, and back home, he's the first thing you think of. I will say this. The Naroon story saved this episode, in my opinion.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. The only thing weaker than the Zarg story, I think, was season one's Infection.
I wouldn't call Infection worse.
There was just, I remember talking to you about this one way back then.
Oh, yeah.
There's just something that about Infection that just rubbed me the wrong way. And but, that's why I'm so emphatic in my own, you know, just my personal opinion.
Yeah, but you know what Infection did for us is it exposed interplanetary expeditions and
right.
their shady way of doing things.
Which sets us up for... Actually, this is episode... What episode is this? 19?
This is 19.
Yeah. This actually sets us up for the end of episode... Infection sets up the end of episode 21 and episode 22.
Mm-hmm.
So... That part, I will give it that much.
So I'm going to say that this storyline was probably the weakest because they were going for this horror thing surrounding Freddy Krueger.
Jeremiah and the bullfrogs.
Yeah, they were going for something that just didn't fit.
Right.
So here's what I think happened with this mess, this right. episode.
Okay, this is that final comment you were going.
Yeah, why? Yeah,
you've got my thoughts, so I'm going to turn it over to you guys.
Not intended as a last word, but I walked away from the episode with this thought: the Naroon storyline was the piece of this that had to be told. There wasn't enough of it there to be its own episode. And there was too much of it there to just jam it into another episode. So I suspect that Straczynski found himself in a position where to tell that piece of the story, he had to create enough around it that it could be an episode. And so we got Gray 17 is Missing, which had a yeah. whole lot of stuff in it that meant nothing in the grand scheme. But we got that bit of story that we needed. As we were just saying, you know,
and seeing at risk of being accused of being a lemming, I had the same thought about this as I watched the episode. This is so far out of what's going on everywhere else that it just seems like we threw this in here to fill time.
Mm-hmm.
So the Jeremiah Zarg part was basically padding to get the necessary Naroon story.
Yeah. Yeah.
If he could have told the Naroon pieces in here in less time, we might have found this in another episode somewhere. But there was nowhere that it would fit. It was enough story by itself that it needed to be alone, I guess, but it wasn't enough to make its own episode. So, you know, one of those bad scenes where Straczynski had to put enough around it to let it be an episode. And
to expand the Naroon storyline would have probably overstated what it was.
Right.
I mean, to have him and Delenn have three or four or five arguments to fill time
right.
to make an episode out of it would have cheapened it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Because that piece, all of that, the argument they did have, the Marcus exchanges in the fight, the exchanges before and during and after the ceremony, that was all as tight and awesome as everything else in the series. It was just the weirdness that surrounded it. And I wonder if the writers just didn't know what to do, so they made some silly stuff up. They had a guy that was Freddy Krueger. They put some things around him for fun that kind of harkened back to horror. But really, that was, you know, either that or they wrote it late on a Friday.
It's like, we got to get out of here.
Monday morning. What you suggest makes perfect sense.
It does.
I'm certainly willing to buy into it.
It makes me feel better about having watched it.
Whoa.
Again. So
I've been known to fast forward through the Zark parts.
Well, you know, I'll be the other lemming because, Raul, you said at the beginning that this is one of your, I think you said, is one of your favorite and one of your least favorite episodes.
At the same time,
I feel that way too. I crave more of the Narun story now, but it was painful to get what we got. So it is a favorite and a least favorite all at the same time.
At the same time, yes. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it makes sense.
Oh, and you know what? That JP is such an excellent wrap up that I don't have any more to add. That's a great area to set of thoughts to leave us at on.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. However, I will add, though, that our next episode, we're going to look at one heck of a humdinger of an episode. Episode number 20 of the third season, And the Rock Cried Out, No Hiding Place. And I'm not talking about Dwayne the Rock Johnson either.
No. This has what some people consider to be one of the single best scenes in the entire series.
Mm. It's an amazing episode. Great cast, great everything, and some really neat stuff in here.
Lots of storylines coming together here.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
And one storyline ending.
And there's music in it, but it's good.
Yeah.
We don't have some chick singing hoochie coochie at what's his name
on doctor. His
walk down below.
Yeah. Speaking of good music.
Uh-oh.
I don't know. Traveling in a fighter combi. I'm going to give you a Vegemite sandwich.
I couldn't resist.
Vegemite. Have any of you ever had that?
I have never had it. I have smelled it.
Oh, I don't even know what it is. But there's people that say it's great. I don't know.
Do you know anyone who homebrews?
No.
Okay, you know, when you do your boil of the wheat and then the mash comes out, you know, you decant off the wort.
Okay.
It kind of smells like that, only bad.
Oh, marvelous.
The mash from a homebrew actually, it smells wonderful. It's like fresh baked bread with an outstanding lager at the same time. But it just smells disgusting too.
Yeah. You know what? We have been going a long time on an episode that isn't one of the best episodes.
Oh my.
So I am going to ask, was there any boom today?
Well, some blood, some smack, but no boom.
Yeah, even with the 38 rounds going off, let's not give that any.
I refuse to count that as boom.
There's no boom. Uh-huh.
Soggy gunpowder is not a boom.
What about? But, are we going to get some boom tomorrow?
There's always boom tomorrow.
Always.
Oh yeah.
Good night, folks.
You bet. Say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Well, there it is. Good night now.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.